My advice always in these sorts of instances is to really focus on the components, first of all, that are fundamental to your business and indeed that you can control. Create a safe haven, if you like, of certain components, and then you can begin to move on from there, because the further you move away from that, the less control you'll have, the more risk you'll introduce.
You're listening to the ISF Podcast for your better cybersecurity. Your host, ISF CEO Steve Durbin, is an expert in leadership, business culture transformation, and cyber strategies for today's top enterprises. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. In today's episode, Steve is interviewed by journalist Nick Witchell on cybersecurity in the current geopolitical moment. Steve reviews the current security landscape and discusses how security leaders can help guide their organizations in these turbulent times.
Steve, it's a year since we last spoke. There's been a sharp increase in international instability since then, particularly, obviously, in recent times. I'd like to consider the implications of that for business. How does the environment change when cyber risks and geopolitical conflicts combine?
Yes, it's really topical, as you say, Nick. And I think that the short answer to that is hugely, because we move from, I think, an environment where most security professionals have become accustomed to dealing with technological aspects, to bringing in the physical component as well. Supply chains would be a good example. We saw that at the beginning of the Russia-Ukraine war. And the complexity that is involved shouldn't be underestimated. So I think businesses really do have to take a much more holistic and broader look at the concept of security, because it's no longer confined to just technology. We've got the physical piece coming back in as well.
And this isn't going to get better, is it? I mean, the impact on long-term security and all of these aspects that you've just enumerated, we have to assume that they are going to continue, certainly in the medium term, and probably get worse.
I think, sadly, that is the case. And I think that, from a business standpoint, what business leaders have to do is adapt very, very quickly to what is a very fast-moving, fast-changing set of environmental circumstances. And I think that very often we can become a little bit overcome by some of the changes that are going on. And so my advice always in these sorts of instances is to really focus on the components, first of all, that are fundamental to your business and indeed that you can control. Create a safe haven, if you like, of certain components, and then you can begin to move on from there, because the further you move away from that, the less control you'll have, the more risk you'll introduce. But actually, if you understand that overall scope, it gives you some comfort that actually you're protecting what should be your crown jewels as much as possible.
Let's look at that in a little more detail. I mean, what are the areas that business leaders, leaders of multinational organizations, all of whom are going to be affected by these considerations, what are the areas specifically that they should be looking at and focusing on?
I think you have to have an overall perspective, first of all, on your business landscape. So where are you doing business? Which parts of the world? How might you be affected in those parts? Now, if you're running a very large multinational, of course, you're going to have significant amounts of people on the ground who are able to provide you with that input, that feedback. But you have to take that country-by-country perspective to it, I think. Then I think I come back to the supply chain. You have to have a very clear idea of where the different component pieces are going to be coming from and the impact on that of any form of conflict. You may want to look for alternative sourcing. So we've seen quite a lot of that, for instance, bringing things back onshore, people who have outsourced into a safer, in inverted commas, type environment, or one over which you have slightly more control rather than where you don't have that level of control. I think the other piece that is really important that perhaps some people quite often forget is the impact on the customer base. Because it may well be that if you have a particularly large and significant amount of orders coming from one part of the world and that suddenly stops, that can have a very significant impact on your ability to continue as a business. At the very least, you're going to have to be informing your stakeholders. If you're a public company, you probably need to be making some form of statement to the markets. So all of those sorts of things I think you need to take into account. But again, it is about doing it in a measured way. There's no need to panic. It is about controlling what you can control and then moving from there.
And is it your impression that boards and CISOs are prepared and are ready to step in with the necessary mitigation measures when these increased cyber risks manifest themselves and when they are related to geopolitical tensions?
Well, it's interesting that you ask that, Nick, because this year we've probably spent, from our professional services standpoint, more of our time running cyber simulation exercises than we've done anything else. And we've done that actually all around the world, with boards right the way down through the organisation. What we've found is that, as you would expect, some boards are better able to respond than others. But in the main, there is, I think, probably two things that give me real comfort that we're moving in the right direction. The first is that there is an understanding now in the boardroom that these things are material and that they have to pay attention to them. And secondly, there is an enthusiasm in the boardroom to be involved in that because they understand the implications on the things that they measure: risk, market cap, shareholders, and so on. So I think we're in probably a much better place to deal with some of these challenges this year than perhaps when we last spoke 12 months ago.
Explore ISF resources on cyber incident preparedness, designed to help you as a CISO understand how to navigate the complexities of geopolitical conflict. Threat intelligence, react and prepare. Rehearsing your cyber incident response capability during periods of instability, and CISO's role during periods of instability. We'll link to these three reports in the show notes, and you can always explore all our research, podcast episodes, news and events, and more at securityforum.org. Now, back to Steve's conversation with Nick Witchell.
You've touched on some of this already, but should major multinational companies now be prepared to consider temporary shutdowns in some parts of the world, or disconnecting or isolating systems in certain territories?
I think, sadly, some organisations may not have a choice. The situation may be such that that shutdown has been enforced. And I think that that is something that every organisation needs to just look at and say, how exposed are we? Because, you know, I've talked a lot about control. That's something that you can't control. And certainly at the ISF Congress, we know that we've had some organisations that haven't been able to bring the people that they'd originally thought, because they can't get out of conflict zones for a variety of different reasons. So I do think that, again, as part of that overall business continuity planning process, that needs to be taken into account. But, you know, there are examples where large organisations have had to respond to this and have done so effectively, with some of the very major ransomware impacts that we've seen over the last number of years. So the good news, if there is any in all of this, is that a lot of security professionals have been practicing, have been rehearsing. So again, it's just about tapping into that knowledge base.
Let's turn to another side of this, and that is the information war. There's a glut of information. We're bombarded with it from all sides. Now, how do you set about distinguishing between reliable, credible information and all the disinformation and the leaks that come very often from nation-state actors?
Very difficult is my immediate reaction to that. Social media has changed the way in which we consume information. On the one hand, it has created a higher degree of transparency. On the other, it has really opened the floodgates for misinformation or disinformation. And so I think as an end user of social media, it really is incumbent on each one of us to really understand where some of those feeds are being taken from, how much we trust some of that information. And personally, what I like to do is to take a number of different data points. So don't become over-reliant on one particular feed. Because again, within the social media space, if you think about it, you tend to lean always to people who are perhaps of a similar mind to yourself. And I think in the sorts of times that we're in at the moment, it's very important for everybody to try and get a balanced perspective, a balanced view. Some of that will inevitably come from social media. Some of it should come from the media and the press. And some of it should just come from common sense.
This perhaps underlines the importance of standing together, of having those reliable sources of information, of relationships. Now, do you feel that enterprises are taking the time that they need to take to build strong relationships with government agencies, with those people who provide information that can be relied upon?
I think, again, from an industry standpoint, from a cyber perspective, huge progress has been made in that space. And I think that has been directly attributable to some of the ways in which governments have set about some regulations. If we look at the EU, for instance, going back years now, GDPR, that was a much more consultative process of coming up with regulation than we'd seen before. That begins to build trust between private sector and government, for instance. And government really does require the input from the private sector. It can't work in isolation. It never has been able to. And I think when you move into the realm of technology and some of the really fast-moving, much more agile environments that we're talking about, then they really do need to get a much broader base of information coming in so that they can adapt to that and make informed decisions as opposed to perhaps emotional decisions.
So distilling, if you like, the key points from everything that we've been talking about for the past number of minutes, where are the areas, what are the points that you would say to a chief executive or to a CISO who is concerned, as we all are, about what is happening in the world at the moment, all the tensions and so on? What are the key points that they should really be focusing on, that these are the priorities?
Yeah, the first thing is the landscape from a chief executive's perspective. You know, understand your business landscape. Where are you exposed? Identify those, focus on those, do what you can to address those, but also be very transparent about the areas that you perhaps are not going to be addressing and why. Shareholders will want to understand that. Your employees will want to understand that. So I think landscape is very important. I think communication is another element of that. You need to be able to explain why you're doing what you're doing. I think as well, as we've just been talking, it's about making sure that you have the most correct and up-to-date information and that you're learning from colleagues who are working in a similar space. So, you know, one of the benefits of the ISF, for instance, is that we do have this very collaborative, collegiate, sharing environment. There's immense value in that during the sorts of times that we're talking about at the moment, because you do tend to get some of that inside track as to what's working and what isn't that you wouldn't otherwise be able to do. So landscape, communication, and then I think just really working your own network and the networks that your people have established.
So the ISF is here and a source potentially of great knowledge and experience and support.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, if I were to sum up the major role of the ISF at the moment, it's in that one word, support. That is what we're there to do. And it's not just ISF Limited, it's also the ISF members.
Steve Durbin, as ever, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Nick.
If you found value in the conversation today between Nick Witchell and Steve Durbin, please give us a 5-star rating and share this episode. Get in touch with Steve directly at steve.durbin@securityforum.org or linkedin.com/in/Steve Durbin. Check out all our media and resources. All of it is there to support you at securityforum.org. And become an ISF member today. Don't miss the ISF Insight Analyst podcast, sharing conversations with members about the real-world applications of ISF research. The ISF podcast is produced by TalkBox Productions and Tavia Gilbert, with senior producer Katie Flood. Additional support from Mandy Morish, Oscar Falk, and Brian Wilson. Music by Alexander Filipiak. Mix and master by Kayla Elrod. Thanks for listening.